Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
What does it take for a community to recover from a natural disaster? Bushfires, cyclones, floods, they're commonplace in a country like Australia. And yes, we are used to dealing with them. But can we do it better? A recent study of two natural disasters in particular, the Black Saturday bushfires in 2009 and the Queensland floods in 2011, has shown that they were almost like two ends of a spectrum in the way they managed the initial disaster and indeed the recovery afterwards. The study was the work of Dr. George Karyannopoulos from Sydney University.
2009 is really considered a failed disaster response. It was a very tragic event, 173 people killed in various parts of Victoria. At any one point, there were numerous fires occurring. And the other case study, 2011, Queensland floods, is seen as a successful response, although again, there were people killed due to some of the flash flooding events. I guess some of the differences really that occurred between the two events partially come down to the context of each of those. So Queensland is a state very much accustomed to natural disaster events, flooding and cyclones on a yearly basis, and tends to, I would tend to call it the disaster state with a disaster state mentality.
We won't be seeing that on a poster anytime soon.
No, not quite the sunshine state.
Perfect one day, disaster the next. Yes, thank you.
That's right.
But all right, and Victoria. But I'm surprised to hear you say that because, especially as as I know, you know, her family lived down in that region. Bushfire has been around them forever.
Definitely, yeah. So these events are very frequent in Victoria because of the geographical profile and the risk profile. But it just appears, particularly at the central government level. So my research really looked at the way in which the state governments respond and interact with the local districts and local council areas. And it might be partially a result of the geographic profile, but a lot of disaster management and planning in Victoria tends to be very Melbourne-centric. Whilst on the other hand, if you look at Queensland, there are significant large urbanised population bases outside of Brisbane. And as a result, I think there's an actual need to make sure that those local and district level arrangements are very well structured and planned and that they integrate well with the state level arrangements.
So you must have been more than passingly interested in the argument during the week between the Rural Bushfire Service and the Town Bushfire Service. Now, this is in New South Wales, but quite a similar scenario to that which occurred during Black Saturday. Wasn't there a lack of jurisdictional awareness, if I could put it in those terms?
Yeah, look, this is one of the core issues of the research area that I've looked at, is the coordination between agencies. And an example this week, and in an example of Black Saturday, you actually have to coordinate across a whole range of entities. So if we think about disaster response in that immediate sense, we're looking at government agencies, departments, so transport, health, all of the key areas, education, obviously, and impact on schooling. And then we're looking also at the emergency response agencies. And these can vary, so your SES, your police, ambulance, metropolitan fire brigades, as well as rural fire services. And I think one of the big issues that we really need to think about is how the motivations vary between all of those agencies. They're all interested in the same outcome, which is having a good disaster response, trying to mitigate loss of life and property. But if you think about a rural fire service, it's a very different character. These are volunteers. These are people largely drawn themselves from the community which might be impacted. And so their motivations in terms of doing what they are doing is very much driven around their community and defending their own properties in some cases, or the properties of neighbours and people they know. So it is difficult. You know. And on the other hand, the professional fire services, they are professionals. That is what they do. But they operate within different paradigms. They're very different types of organisations. And it does seem to be a perennial issue about how you coordinate effectively across agencies during these times.
Our guest on Open House is Dr. George Karyannopoulos. Just finished his PhD research and written a book about disaster management in Australia. He's the guy who literally wrote the textbook on the lessons learned from Black Saturday and also from the floods in Queensland in 2011. Let me press you on what you've just said. Did you mean to say, or were you meaning to imply, that the paid full-time fire service, the town brigades, if you were, have a lesser commitment to their local communities, and that is a different way, that means they respond in a different way?
No, I wouldn't say that, because in many cases the commitment is equally there. I think for all of our emergency responders, they're really interested in trying to get a successful outcome, trying to mitigate the events that could go on. I think when you start thinking more about at the higher hierarchical level of the organisations, there are those questions though about what is the role of a metropolitan fire brigade in a rural fire scenario. And that was really borne out a little bit this week, so in the New South Wales South Coast fire. The media were very quick to jump on the fact that some requests to provide assistance to the RFS were rejected at the time and then subsequently taken up.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there's a more nuanced discussion which happens here. We do have to keep in mind that people are making decisions under very stressful, difficult situation. And sometimes when the full range of available is not necessarily there for them to have that information at hand. And I think that the really important part as all of that unfolds is keeping in mind that, you know, the right equipment, do they have the right orientation? Are they appropriately, do they have the right kit? Do they have all of the things that they need to fight fires in those particular situations? And if we think about Tathra, some of the remoteness of the landscapes around there, the terrain, it may not have meant that in that moment they were able to accept that assistance, or it may have possibly put their colleagues at risk. So there are some really worthwhile and interesting considerations that actually happen in those decisions. And I think a more nuanced discussion is more appropriate rather than trying to, you know, create a controversy in the wake of an event.
Well, absolutely, which is what the union was criticised for doing during the week, and I'm fully on board with that criticism. For years, for decades, to my knowledge, the government policy has been trying to bring these groups closer together and avoid patch wars and those sorts of things, even down to, and this was a feature in Victoria, as I recall it, getting similar frequencies for emergency radios and so on. So there's a big communication piece going on there. But are you saying that amongst other things, their training and equipment, their other training and equipment is different, that one might be looking at preventing fires in natural landscape, the other property protection? Is it as simple as that, or have I got that too simply?
I think the environments are very different. Obviously, when you're looking at a professional fire service, they're fighting in more urbanised environments, whereas what's being encountered by the rural fire services or the country fire authority is very different in terms of the remoteness, the terrain, the accessibility to that. Obviously, if you look at things like backburning, those are functions that the professional fire brigade may not usually undertake in terms of managing those kinds of situations. So there are those variances, and they're both highly specialised in their own functions and increasingly also dependent on technology. So if we look at things like the use of drone technology, that's becoming a really important piece of armoury for the fire services in terms of understanding fire behaviour and movement, and also really importantly in the aftermath to actually assess what's happened, whether there's still risk to citizens and communities, and when people can be appropriately let back in to quite rightfully look and see if their property is still surviving and what condition it's in.
Now, you've contrasted the Black Saturday fires with the floods in Queensland, and you've said that one, the former, an example of worst practice, the latter, an example of good practice. But is part of the difference there simply the amount of warning that was received? And that's been the same in the last week. The fires in the last week, they've flared up suddenly. It's not something that you could prepare for, as it were. And then you get down to questions about whether you're exactly what you're advising people to do, to stay and fight, protect their properties and their lives, or to run ahead of the fire or not, you know, move. So is that the difference in preparedness?
Look, that's a really good point. So in Australia, we have something called the All Hazards Framework, which really emphasises that the preparation for natural disasters is not based on the specific threat, but on more of the general characteristics about what you need to do during the event and in the aftermath. But you have hit a really important point there. So during a flood event, and barring flash flooding, and we did see flash flooding in 2011 in Queensland, quite tragically, there were a number of places in the Lockyer Valley which experienced that, and there was very little warning time around that. But to say that in most instances during a flood, you do have time. If we look at Brisbane City, and that the flooding really culminated in January of 2011 in Brisbane, there was actually quite a long lead-in time to look at what those flood events might look like, as opposed to a fire, which is highly variable, highly unpredictable. I guess the key learning that's come out of 2009 was really the information that was provided to people about the old stay or go policy.
Yes.
And that was a policy which at the time sounded quite reasonable to stay or to go. But the key part was people didn't really get a sense of when to stay or when to go. The messaging is now extremely clear that it is now too late to leave. You are encouraged to stay where you were. And that was largely based on the fact that a large proportion of people who were killed in Black Saturday actually died on the roads as opposed to in their own properties, defending their properties. Mm. So there's been a lot of thought about that over the past few years. And particularly in Victoria, there's actually been an entire change to the emergency management arrangements and system in place as a result of the Royal Commission, now headed by the body Emergency Management Victoria. So there has been a lot of thought happening in after both of these events, and certainly in Queensland there was a lot of scrutiny about the release of water from the Wivenhoe Dam, when that was done, who knew what and when, and whether that could have been averted and how dam management works. And also keeping in mind that Brisbane is a vastly different city in 2011 to what it was in 1974, which was the previous major flood in that city.
Any early thoughts from you on what we'll learn from the past couple of weeks, 10 days?
Yeah, look, I think overall there'll be continued scrutiny of the interactions between different agencies, particularly around the professional firefighting bodies and the rural fire services. But I think overall there will always be a reflection about early warning and alerts and how that works. And there was a little bit of controversy in New South Wales about lack of mobile phone coverage and the ability to actually, essentially a poor lack of mobile phone coverage, which meant that not everyone received emergency alerts.
Well, and I giggle because I noticed the result of that was the usual, it was Canberra's fault from the state government. Well, I don't think people are really fussed anymore. They just want a mobile phone service, and that seems fair enough.
No, and that also gets to the point that, you know, increasingly there is scepticism in government in the ability to deliver. But when it does come to these really critical moments, people have very high expectations about what will be delivered to them in terms of the preparation, the immediate response, and really importantly, in the recovery to these events. And they are looking at government. And when I say government, I say that broadest conceptualization. So whether that's local, state or federal, people really want to feel that there's an appropriate response that happens and that it happens quickly. And we did see this week in New South Wales, the Premier and the Prime Minister were both on the ground within the first 48 hours in Tathra. And that's another common approach that happens in the post-disaster landscape, to have these key leaders on the ground.
Yes, and turning that into a way that meets expectations without it becoming another source of frustration. That's the elegance of the political game, and let's hope they can do that. Well, thank you very much for your work, and thanks for speaking with us on Open House.
Thanks very much, Stephen.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.